JC2S, Part 2. Number 5A.
So we love that, don't we? And so this is what the matrix of the oneness of being is showing us, how the origin of the textbook is also from divine science. So if in our quiet moments we take that oneness of being matrix along with the book by Kapler, and begin to culture the higher impulse, the higher origin of the textbook, and begin to love it. And one can already reason in a matrix, as we did this morning. We could then say, oh, well, I can see, of course, that that matrix of the oneness of being now would always have its tonality divine science. So if the A subject is divine science, then the I and the J are also divine science. It's just the subject of divine science behind science and health. So if we look then at this matrix on page 105, we see that all the word chapters have the I indice index as man's oneness with God. You hear the oneness tone. Man's oneness with God. That, of course, is the word, always man to God. So the word is man's oneness with God. And then the Christ is the expression of God's oneness with man. That's the Christ, isn't it? God is in its oneness with man. And then the outcome is the one universe of ideas. And science is integrated being. Do we hear divine science? Always oneness, isn't it? First of all, man's oneness with God through the word chapters. Then again, the Christ chapters, the expression of God's oneness with man. Then the outcome, the Christianity chapters, the one universe of ideas. And science chapters, integrated being. But because being reflects itself, that it always reflects itself, giving us therefore the word chapters will always show them that man's oneness with God is accepted in its fundamental proposition of oneness. And the Christ chapter of God's oneness with man, that is also accepted as a fundamental proposition of oneness. And in the Christianity chapters, the one universe of ideas, that is accepted as a proposition of oneness. And science as integrated being, that's accepted as a proposition of oneness. So we'll just maybe do the first vertical, the word, and then I'll let you go on, and I'll refer back to it when we get on to the others. Well, let's go on to up to the sixth chapter, working with the oneness matrix, because that will take us up to where we're working. So just generally, we see then the word is the word of prayer. We see, oh, well, I see then that man's oneness with God, which in prayer has the fundamental proposition of oneness stated. Therefore, in the chapter of prayer, we have the fundamental oneness of man with God. That's stated. That's the proposition. So now we see that that fundamental oneness of man with God is brought out through the textbook matrix. So we look then over to page 102 to the textbook matrix, and we say, oh, there on the chapter of prayer, I just learned at the word of the word that the revelation of God's nature is accepted in us, So God's nature comes to us and we respond by accepting God's nature in us. So if we look at the oneness matrix, it says in the book that the fundamental oneness of man with God, that's the fact behind prayer. The fact behind prayer is that there is the fundamental oneness of man with God. And how is that brought out? By the revelation of God's nature in us being accepted. You see? That's how that's brought out. By accepting the revelation of God's nature in us brings out the fundamental oneness of man with God in our consciousness. Then we go on and we look at Atonement and Eucharist, and we say, oh, this is wonderful. Now I see there's a sense of oneness already. The garments are white in Atonement and Eucharist, as a divine science behind that chapter. So this is somehow going to show me that man's oneness with God brings out the godlikeness. So we see the epitome of oneness behind Atonement and Eucharist, and it says, Man's oneness with God is exemplified through the godlike. And we say, oh, that is brought out then through the textbook matrix, that man's oneness with God is exemplified through the godlike, by God's nature coming to us and as the Christ manifesting itself in us in spite of the ungodlike in us. And because we allow that to happen in us, we therefore welcome God's nature coming to us and manifesting itself in us in spite of what is ungodlike in us, then that is just bringing out that point of oneness, that we already are one with God, and this is exemplified through the godlike in us. And then we say, well, all right, I just go on to the word as Christianity of marriage, and I just keep remembering then that divine science, that there's a standpoint of oneness between man and God behind the marriage chapter, of which the textbook matrix is trying to bring out. So we say to ourselves, what is that standpoint of our oneness with God behind the marriage chapter? And it says, oh, it's our oneness with God's universe. And we say, well, how is our oneness with God's universe brought out? And we look to the textbook matrix and said, oh, it's by accepting God's nature in us has an impact. It demonstrates in us a higher humanhood. It demonstrates in us a higher response with God's universe. And so we say, all right, now I'm just getting the method of it, and I'm going to go home and to my room, and I'll practice it this evening, but at least we're just getting the feel and the tonality of how perhaps these two matrices can go together. And we go back now to the fourth chapter, which says, oh, well, there is a fact of oneness between man and God, between us and God, even behind the Christian Science versus Spiritualism chapter. And what is that? And it says in the oneness matrix that fundamental oneness that exists is that man's understanding and God's understanding are already one. That's a fact. It doesn't have to be achieved. But the textbook matrix shows how that's brought out in our life. And it says, well, our understanding and God's understanding is one because we accept the revelation of God's nature in our life, which then enables us to understand only by scientific methods of understanding. And therefore, by welcoming God's nature in us, we have only those scientific methods of understanding. And with those scientific methods of understanding, we see that our understanding and God's understanding are one. Isn't that nice? Beautiful. Then we say, all right, we're just going to go right over to the Christ chapters in the oneness matrix and say, gee, there's also a fundamental proposition of oneness that is already a fact in being, that this textbook matrix is just showing us how to discover what is already there. That's, as we saw, the method of science, to discover through the methods that which is already within its domain. So we say, well, what is already within the domain that the animal magnetism chapter is trying to bring out in our life? And we say, well, first of all, it's the Christ is the Word. What's already a fact is that there is the expression of God's oneness with man. And so all we have to do now is see that proposition of oneness in the Animal Magnetism Unmasked chapter. What is it, we say? Well, the proposition is there is only one power of manifestation, God good. And we say, wonderful, there is only one power of manifestation. God's oneness with man in the Animal Magnetism chapter is shown that there is only one power of manifestation, and that is God's good. Good. And we say, well, that in the Christian Science matrix comes to us, that's translated to us, right down to where we are. And all we have to do is accept this Christ's translation in our lives, and it's going to translate the ungodlike in us back into its native nothingness. And we'll say, well, what does it mean, the ungodlike in us in that point? Oh, I know what it means that it's going to translate the ungodlike in us. It's going to translate out of us any belief that any other power is going on besides God's good. That proposition of oneness, isn't it? So we know now that we have that fact of oneness, and we stick to it then, that there is only the one power of God good. And when we study, therefore, the Animal Magnetism Unmasked chapter, we're going to let that translation come to us, and we're going to accept it, and we're going to allow the ungodlike or the belief in us that there are two powers going on, good and evil. And then we say, well, let's go on to the sixth chapter and say, my, isn't this wonderful? We can see then that God and its manifestation is one. And say, well, that is now being brought out in this chapter six. And we say, how is it that God in its manifestation is one? How is that brought out in my life? And we say, well, I'll go back to the sixth chapter of Science, Theology, and Medicine and see how the Christ is the Christ brings out that God and man is one. And we go and say, oh, I see how it does it. It does it through the translation and retranslation. God brings its nature to us and retranslates out of us everything that isn't like that nature. But God doesn't only come to us, but it comes to the world. It comes to the universe. It comes to all science. It comes to all theology. It comes to all medicine and translates out of the universe, including science, theology, medicine, our life, everything that isn't like God, all those false constituents within consciousness, and sets it back into the true constituents of being. So therefore we can see in this chapter, therefore, that God and its manifestation are one. God and its manifestation have the same nature, because the Christ has come and translated out of the universe, including man, including science, theology, and medicine, all those false constituents, and taking it back only to the nature of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So we can see, can't we, that beautiful oneness makes you, and go on and practice with it. Again, maybe this evening, now we practice this afternoon, just with the Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science part of the matrix. Now take the oneness matrix and see, as I said, behind every chapter is already ready. God is already a fact and already fulfilled. So the textbook is just, as we see now, enabling us to discover that pre-established realm of our oneness with God. Terrific work that Max has given to us with, of course, both of these matrices, but especially having now that divine science one. So now that we have the book and the matrix, it becomes part of our exercising in consciousness through concept building, tonality building, and oneness building, all enabling us finally to be impelled into that standpoint of divine science. So we say, yes, that subject of oneness, it's very important, and we want to see now how it is going to be behind the sixth chapter. And so I'm building up more and more towards the sixth chapter. And we see then that God really is, therefore, a principle. Let's just put up that definition for principle. It's always important for us to see that God is a principle, and that God, therefore, is not an anthropomorphic concept, but that this God, we're talking about man's oneness with God, or God's oneness with man. What is this God that we're trying to become one with? What is the central order that we're trying to become one with? Well, we know now that Mrs. Eddy defined that God to us in Christian Science, and it absolutely has revolutionized science, theology, and medicine. All three of them, it shows. Just on this definition of what God is, has taken away the mythological concept out of science, out of theology, out of medicine. Because Mrs. Eddy didn't say, as religion does say or theology does say, that God is just an anthropomorphic concept, a deity, an old, perhaps white-haired gentleman in the sky with a long beard with the Holy Family around him, and that in order for us to get to God, we pray through these various mediums and saints to get to this mythological family. We know if we were a religion, or which we're not, but if we were, and it was based on a mythological concept, we would approach God totally different than we are through the Bible and the textbook now, through science and understanding. We'd have a different textbook. Our truth would not be science, and our truth would not be consciousness. Our truth would be perhaps rituals. In order to attract our oneness with God, we would be doing rituals here. We might bring in these symbols. Our symbols would perhaps be deities, and perhaps we would want to feed the deity to get its attention. So we do little rituals of feeding the deity, all of us. Maybe we would begin with Louisa, and she would feed it, and then we'd come along, and Peggy would feed the deity. It's possible. That's a religion. Or we'd decide, well, maybe that's not getting the attention of that anthropomorphic God or that I in heaven, so through that symbol, so maybe we just get rid of those idols and decide, well, we're just going to do sacrifices, human sacrifices. And then Denise says, don't look at me, I'm not going to be part of this religion of sacrificing any humans. But they have, haven't they, in order to get the attention of a deity. So we certainly aren't going to practice human sacrifices or any of these rituals and practices that have gone on in the name of God, in the name of theology, sorry to say.
$1,000.
Pardon?
$1,000 and you'll be in heaven.
Yes, $1,000 and they'll be in heaven. However these practices are, that's true. Whatever they are, it's always, as Mrs. Eddy shows in prayer, somehow to beseech an anthropomorphic concept. But right away in prayer she says, God has not an ear to hear. And suddenly we say, oh no. We're in trouble, because we still have within ourselves, when we are in trouble, to cry out to God. But what Mrs. Eddy did then is to de-anthropomorphize God and to show that God is a principle. Therefore, her textbook isn't talking about rituals and sacrifices. It's talking about science and understanding. Because she says then that God is a principle. Capital P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E, and if we look up the meaning of principle in the dictionary, we see and know that it means a fundamental truth, a comprehensive law, which includes all others, or on which others are founded. So God is that comprehensive law from which others are derived and from which others are founded. A general truth. So she said, God is the comprehensive law of the universe from which all other laws are founded and from which all other laws come forth. So we see then that that structure of being, that model of being, really shows that on the level of science itself, that that is principle, God. And out of that law of isness comes all the other laws, that God is a one God, a holistic God. And out of the law of infinity, out of the matrix of infinity, comes then the level of divine science with its law of self-organization, and then the level of absolute Christian science with its law of spontaneity, and then the level of Christian science with its law of divine causality. That's God. And so naturally, when Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, for example, showed that Jesus' life was the expression of the law of interdependence of life, and the law, Matthew and Mark, the law of interdependence of truth, and Luke, the law of interdependence of love, and John, the law of interdependence of the divine principle, love, that Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Well, now is he God on earth, as theology said? Well, then he must be God. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So they say that God literally came to the earth. How else could we interpret it? But according to science and understanding, if you've seen me, you've seen those laws in operation, and those laws are God. I am the individual expression of those laws in operation. So therefore, we completely have taken away any anthropomorphic concept in Christian Science, and that is why we see the textbook approaches this whole subject of God through science and understanding, through understanding those laws of God. Now, with that, as we go on to begin to get closer and closer to the law then of the sixth chapter, which is God appearing as the Christ in the Christ, there's just one more point before we start these various laws, is that of cybernetics. I just want to touch on it again briefly because it's so important for us to just keep remembering over and over and over again now that as we touch these laws, that these laws always operate cybernetically. They operate by themselves. Jesus didn't make the subject of Matthew happened in his life, or Mark, or Luke, or John. He didn't. Those laws were operating, and he just had the humility of the right attitude of Christianity, which is, blessed is the poor in spirit. Blessed is that I know I don't know, that I can only do what the Father does. Don't call me good, call the Father. With that Christ attitude, he allowed these laws to happen in their life. As we know, they're self-operating, self-organizing, self-regulating, error-correcting, error-preventing laws. So these laws, called God, are operating according to divine cybernetics, which is the subject of how God operates, not what God is. And therefore, God and these as laws are always operating, therefore, point one, by themselves, as I said. We don't set those laws in operation. They're just operating as we go on with the textbook laws. It's not because we're culturing, concept building, learning what the laws are, and then tonality building, going over and over in our consciousness what those laws are till they become the tone of our consciousness. And once they're the tone of our consciousness, they become our very own being. That doesn't set the laws in operation, as we see. All that concept building, tonality building, consciousness building, and being building does with us is enable us to accept the laws into our life and not resist them. To accept them through science and not to resist them and get the suffering. We're going to experience them anyhow, we know, through the Christ subject. But we want to experience them through science and understanding, but and not through suffering. So this culturing of the subjects allows us to understand it through science and understanding and not through suffering. So these laws operate by themselves, and they always operate holistically. There's that subject of holism that we touch very clearly in the Christianity as Christianity tone and some objection answered. We see then that God always operates as a whole, never divides itself up, ever. And there is where we touched on that subject there of that oceanicness, where we saw then that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And therefore that God always operates as a whole, and it never can be divided into its parts ever, ever, ever. Spirit just does not let God be divided. It's only a belief that God can be divided. God doesn't divide itself. Those laws never turn into their opposite. We'll see it's a claim of spiritualism that they do turn into their opposite, but they can't. So God always operates as a whole. Never can be divided. But we see it not only operates holistically, but those laws called God always operate dimensionally. They always operate as the whole, appearing in many different forms, on many different levels, yet still remaining the whole. And as we see, that takes away the subject from mysticism, doesn't it? It makes it a science, because a science differentiates. Mysticism sucks us up into an undifferentiated whole. If we were studying mysticism, and if the textbook was a sub that truth was mysticism, therefore we would stop right here. We'd say that God operates by itself holistically, and we all get sucked up into the undifferentiated whole. But because the subject is truth, which is understood through science, we always see that science differentiates. God operates scientifically according to spirit. Spirit always never lets God divide itself, but spirit diversifies, classifies, and individualizes all of God's nature. So therefore, God operates as a whole, that one infinite individuality, which appears as many infinite individualities, yet still remaining the one God. So that one God, the whole, appears as universe, divine science, as individual man, absolute Christian science, which is always being discovered on the level of Christian science. And then the next important point that runs through, especially this whole subject of divine science through the whole textbook, is that it's a divine principle love. That it's a principle which is operating teleologically. And that's what, when we couple divine principle love on divine science, and as it runs through the science tone, theology tone, medicine tone, in the sixth chapter, we see therefore that it's a whole which operates as a whole, which is always shaped by the purpose of the whole, bringing out what the whole wants to bring out in the universe, bringing out what the whole wants to bring out in our life. And we know now not what we want to bring out in our life. This is a fact, but what we will see is that the belief is that this fact can be turned into its opposite, and this is now what we're going to look at from the flow, especially from the fourth to the fifth to the sixth chapter. We're now just going to narrow ourselves down to looking at those laws behind the fourth chapter, then the fifth chapter, and then finally we'll come into the sixth chapter where we're at our home base for our work for this week.